embedded in all these things. They aren't just simply somebody comes out and tells you, hey, you need to be honest, or you don't steal, don't cheat. These are lessons that are embedded in so much of what we do and how we think and how we believe. So they teach us how to be good, authentic people. And when I say authentic, that's a very big topic in human development for Indigenous people. Because we're talking about how to be good people with the world around us. So authentic to us really meant something where it was a goal to become, right? So these norms, they would provide positive goals, direction, problem-solving tools, positive coping mechanisms, tools of redress in case that we have conflicts in our relationships. It taught us healthy relationships, tools, reconciliation. It had so much that it teaches how to be good humans, right? Now, an example of not having this, I'll use, let's say a death, like loss and grief. When you have your culture and you have these norms, and again, I'm speaking from an Indigenous point of view, there's usually social ceremony. The community is there as a support to help you go through the many stages of grieving and get through it in a healthy way. But when we don't have these norms, when we don't have a culture to help us do this, as an individual, we'll turn towards alcohol as a way of trying to drown out the grief, and that becomes our negative coping mechanism to deal with it. Right? So we have to recognize that culture gives us the ability to deal with so many of our problems, as well as teaches how to be better people, right? So what happens, like in a state of anime, like what happens when you have no culture or a suppressed culture? People without the culture, to teach them and guide them to be, you know, good people, right? They become vulnerable, they become in a mess of negative characteristics, traits, behaviors, and they tend to adopt negative coping mechanisms because the positive ones aren't there to be taught to them. And this can happen at the individual level, or it can even happen at a social level. Because we can remember, culture is something that's done as a group of people. There is no culture of one. So if culture is being suppressed or it's somehow being negated, then we're talking about collectives, communities, nations. And that's usually why we talk about the state of anime on a larger level. But, I mean, you know, it's experienced also on the individual level. Right. So if I was to look at a community and I want to try to look for these indicators of the state of anime, you'd be looking for things like widespread alcohol, substance and drug abuse, crippling addictions. So whether it's gambling addictions, work addictions, sex addictions, spouse and child abuse, that could be physical abuse, sex abuse, could be neglect. You look for like collective apathy, cynicism, lateral violence, that's a big one. And of course, physical violence, you know, that comes from like the really repressed, unresolved ability to deal with issues. Crime and corruption. And eventually, because we said earlier, Durkheim was studying suicide, he said this all eventually leads towards the direction of self-harm and suicide. So that includes anything from, you know, inflicting damage on yourself to attempting suicide, even slow suicide. And that's kind of what, like, alcohol and drug abuse is, right? We know where it ends. We know where it goes. We know it'll eventually kill us, but we're still going that direction. And in the very, very end, you know, with absolute feeling helplessness, people deliberately commit suicide, right? So if we think of the state of anime, like, severe social dysfunctionalism, like a social breakdown, I think that might capture the feeling of it, because it's very collective in terms of not just who's experiencing it, but collective in terms of all these different negative traits that happen all together, right? Mm-hmm. So this may sound familiar to some of us. We say, oh, wow, my reserve is kind of like that, has a lot of these problems. We could also look at low-income neighborhoods, like the inner cities. And we can say, well, they seem to be plagued with all these problems. And that could actually mislead us to think that since poverty is the common denominator in low-income neighborhoods and reserves, we'll tend to think that, well, maybe people, you know, a solution would be, you know, just pull up yourselves by your bootstraps, harden up, get a job. And we think that's like the solution, right? But it's not, because that doesn't capture the real understanding of the problem. We're framing the problem wrong. We, and an indicator of that is you could look at wealthy reserves, ones that have like really vast royalties, and they still experience the same problem. So it didn't matter if you produced more wealth. The economic solution wasn't a solution. What we have to realize with the state of anime is the problem, the conditions that create the state of anime, are way more complex than simply an economic solution. At its foundation, it's a political, cultural problem. So, in thinking about that, like, how did indigenous people end up in this place we're at with the state of anime? And that's because of colonialism. Colonialism waged a war of cultural genocide for centuries. The church and Christianity was a key player, and it still is, right, in targeting and attacking indigenous culture for extermination. Our way of life, meaning like our way of living with the land in a self-determining, sustainable, mutually beneficial way, was violently shut down as colonizers engaged in ethnic cleansing to take away our lands and resources. They forced us onto reserves, and they replaced our way of life, which was self-sustaining, right? We were self-sufficient. We were independent. But it replaced it with devastating poverty and utter dependence on the government, so that way they had complete control over us. Our worldview, our beliefs, our values, and practices were all suppressed, and in many cases, they were outlawed. Our elders, our knowledge keepers, and the very traditions they had were replaced by priests and nuns in the early days, and later on by public school teachers, all teaching us European culture and suppressing our indigenous culture. Now, there was a period, I mean, it overlaps. There was a period where you move from cultural genocide into assimilation. And that's when our culture was severely damaged. It received so much attack. It was severely damaged, fragmented, and a lot of it was put into hiding. And then we see this more of an assimilation campaign begins. And we could easily say, you know, what kind of really captures the idea of assimilation campaign was the residential school era. And we know, like, our belief systems, our language, our spiritualism were all attacked at residential schools. And it was forcibly replaced with a foreign invasive culture, the obedient laborers. So we didn't learn nothing. We didn't learn nothing about our own culture and all the norms that obtained. Now, to really understand the depth of the damage of the state of anime, you have to recognize it didn't happen in a vacuum. There were other things going on alongside the state of anime. And that was like the countless colonial atrocities. Just to name some, like, you have genocide, principal genocide, ethnic cleansing, like ongoing wars, you know, throughout the centuries, forced famine, indigenous government overthrow, mass land theft. We don't even have a word that captures the entirety of what it means to steal continents. We see territorial destruction. We see our land being, what we consider relatives, non-human relatives, being destroyed right in front of us. The subjugation of our people, the occupation of our areas, mass kidnapping, mass child torture and murder. And that is in conjunction with the cultural genocide and assimilation that creates all those conditions that we call the state of anime. So 500 years of that apocalyptic experience creates colonial traumas that are, they're complex, they're compounded, they're interconnected, they're unresolved, intergenerational, they're systemic, and they're still ongoing. So think about what that does to a person in terms of traumas, multiple layers of traumas that are all interconnected, right? So we, in essence, we don't have an authentic culture that would help us deal with this. It would have been a shield, some of these problems that we've seen in the state of anime. And you add this layer of colonial traumas, and you are setting up the perfect conditions for what we think of when we say the state of anime. Now, if we want to look at this and say, all right, how do we identify in people individuals, and you know, on a widespread scale, you can see it in communities, right? But how do we identify it? We want to look for things like self-loathing. Our people are taught to really be disgusted with who they are and themselves, to look at ourselves as inferior due to racism, classism, sexism. There's anger because you have a lifetime of unresolved abuses, and we pretty much feel powerless to get any justice to deal with them. We were taught fear of white authority. We were conditioned to obey white authority as kids. Wait a moment. Okay. Then we have hate. And usually it's misdirected. Instead of all that anger that creates the hate being directed at the offender, the colonizer, we tend to target our own people or even ourselves. Then that also comes out as violence. That could be lateral violence. That could be physical violence or psychological violence. And again, we target our own people or ourselves. Then we see things like addictions, because these are just negative coping mechanisms. So alcohol, drugs, substance addictions, gambling, things like that, right? These are ways that we're trying to deal with all our problems, but obviously they're not effective. You'll also find severe depression, crippling anxiety, and there's this term called learned helplessness. There's a psychologist by the name of Martin Seligman, and he's the one who kind of came up with this concept. And he basically said, when people are powerless to address a problem, they have no way of correcting it, reducing it, mitigating it, then what happens is they go into like a state of apathy. It comes from depression and mental illness, where you just allow the atrocities or injustices or harms to keep happening, and you basically just give up. And he said this is a state of mind that people will learn to go into. Right? Now, people got that. We also have victimization, because again, we feel powerless to change our circumstances. So instead, we pursue pity from the very people that are offending us. And then, of course, this, you know, devolves towards self-harm and eventually suicide. So you can look at all these things and think about them also on a widespread scale, because that's when we start thinking more on the social level in our communities, not just the individual level. And it's kind of like thinking about the idea of a breakdown in social order, right? And then what are the outcomes and negative outcomes from that, right? So what we're left with is, like, how do we deal with this? How do we address this problem of this state of anime? And I'm going to toss out a few ideas, but obviously, you know, they require a lot more fleshing out, not fleshing out, real discussions on it, right? But first off, we have to change the frame of the problem. So earlier I said most of the times people think it's an economic problem, right? But as I said, it's not. It's beyond that. We also have to recognize it's not an individual problem. The state of anime is about attacking culture. And as I said, there is no such thing as a culture of one. Culture is something you experience by interacting with other people around you, right? So, excuse me. We got to see this as not just like an individual issue around trauma and addictions. Because really, the addiction, what we visibly see, those addictions, are just symptoms. We have to get down to the core of this, the real disease, and that's colonialism. Mm-hmm. So we have to find ways of addressing all those things I spoke about before, like genocide, ethnic cleansing, land theft, and assimilation, and on, right? We have to address them because they all are the disease. They're the ones, that's what's going to cause all the problems. So colonialism has been all about this idea of a great disconnecting. It disconnected us from our parents, our siblings, our extended families, our community. It disconnected us from our language, our belief, our spiritualism. It disconnected us from our lands and territories and our culture and identity. So really, when we start talking about what do we do about that, we have to talk about reconnection. And that means going back to who we were traditionally, like what did it mean to be indigenous? Mm. Now, we have seen success on a small scale. So when indigenous people go into like some rehab treatments, there is this idea called culture-based interventions where they address the addictions using cultural tools and rebuilding kind of these cultural components in people. And it's demonstrated to be more successful than the typical kind of alcoholics or Alcoholics Anonymous kind of programs, right? It's been more successful. But the problem is it's too limited and too temporary. And then, of course, you know, when people leave rehab, they go right back to their communities, and that's where the state of enemy is taking place, because it's a collective experience, not individual, right? So we need something bigger, something that is culture-based, but bigger. So we are talking about cultural resurgence. We need to be able to reconnect to our land and rebuild all those components of culture, spiritualism, beliefs, language, how we relate to the land, how we relate to the life of the land, the non-human life of the land. And we also need justice, because we need to address those unresolved issues. Mm-hmm. So we need to be, if we're going to think about becoming healthy again, if we want to heal from this colonial atrocities and the state of anime that becomes the outcome of all that, we really have to talk about how do we rebuild our culture, how do we reconnect to the land, and how do we reconnect to our authentic identities? Hmm. And then we can start really seeing some real progress in our healing.
Beautiful. Man, that's so awesome, so deep, man. We really appreciate your knowledge and your wisdom and just coming on to the program and sharing all this deep information. We really thank you. Well,
thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to go over this stuff. I know it's complex and it's heavy stuff, but we really get to start being able to frame our problems for ourselves, understand our problems before we can come up with our solutions. Mm. So I do appreciate the opportunity to speak on them. Thanks so much, and all my relations.
Yes, thank you very much. We're going to have to say bye for now, and thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, good strength. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our brother Sagage from the Mi'kmaq people with some wise words. Always a blessing to have him come on our program and share. Anyways, we're going to have to get the show going again. We're going to be right back.
On average, every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. The women in our communities deserve to feel safe from both emotional and physical abuse. They deserve men who control their anger. Most importantly, they deserve to know the people they love most will never hurt them. Men like me stand up to create a safer world for the women in our lives. And we're looking to men like you, the men who make up our communities, to join us. You can play an active part to end violence. Visit www.whiteribbon.ca.
All right, we're back, and we're going to continue on with the program. We're going to get to our next co-host coming up. It's Shkwait Shakhlach from Goishkinab, BC, and we're going to play his song of the week, which is Broken Peach, One Way or Another. Enjoy, everybody. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. right, we're back. That was Broken Peach, One Way or Another, and that was their Halloween special. That was the pick of the week of Shkwait Shachlach, and he's on the line with us right now. For people out there that don't know him, he's my brother. He's a survivor of Guillain-Barré syndrome, lymphoma, cancer, the big forest fires of a few years ago, flood of a few years ago. So a very special individual that survived all that. Big inspiration to myself and many other people all around the world. Welcome to the program, Shkwait. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing as well as can be. Still alive and kicking and getting good check marks from the doctors. I just had an appointment with them.
Very good. We have a subject today, and it's on constructive change. So we'd love to hear your words on that.
You know, when we think of change and all that, you know, we have to be self-aware of something we need to change in our lives, or, you know, in our goals. The way we view things, see things, you know, we got to be aware that something we're doing might be a weakness. So we, you know, we just don't lump the whole, our whole goals, set of goals, and just make a new plan. We got to change, you know, slightly, you know. You know, some of us, you know, who've had to go through health changes and all that. You know, I used to be a pretty heavy tobacco user, and you know, I probably tried to quit on my own every now and then. You know, just what do you call that? Cold turkey. Maybe, you know, for a fraction of those who are trying to get off that bad habit, you know, cutting cold turkey might work immediately. But for the rest of us, you know, we go snake. You know, if we don't cut down from a carton to a day. You know, to half a carton a day, to a couple of packs, you know, and to one or two, you know, that you know, you're making change, but not drastically. You know, you can't just suddenly decide you're going to be a Olympic high board diver. You know, you gotta get to the pool's edge and jump in from there, and then maybe up to the baby board, then the mid board, then finally the high board. You know, it's just a matter of making gradual, achievable goal sets in your change.
Excellent words. We really thank you and appreciate for your wisdom and your words. Always a blessing to have you come on and share, and we're going to speed along.
Okay.
So we thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping I'm spouting off good, good knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thank you guys for your well wishes, thoughts, prayers, and love. You at the station there, and the guys behind the scene, and the listeners here and abroad, I thank you for it all. Send it back a thousandfold.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, and bye for now.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Okay, and also now we have the president of Minnetonka Park Association, Celia. We'd love to hear some words from you.
Yeah, it's you know, the thing about constructive changes, it's natural. I think it's really natural for us to want to stay with what's familiar, comfortable, easy. And it's that kind of law of inertia that we just keep doing what we've always done. I'm talking, I mean, your brother Sagic was talking about very deep layers and complex layers earlier in how he addressed things. I'm talking for more general changes. And that we can get a sense of learned helplessness within, like, if we keep doing a certain thing a certain way, and the idea of, like, not having confidence to just go forward once we're aware we want to make a change and sort of do the baby steps, as your other brother Squelch was saying, that, you know, to do baby steps, what I would call baby steps towards, you know, making changes. And my one thing is it's really important. The process that we do really matters, because you were talking about winning and the bottom line and getting so focused on the outcome of what you want that sometimes losing sight of the bigger picture of how, you know, of what really is, what something is all about, which for you with the hockey analogy was like playing, like the joy of playing and togetherness. By getting so serious that it started to turn into something else altogether. Mm. At least that's the way I was interpreting what you were saying. So,
very beautiful.
And we don't have to do everything alone. Mm-hmm. We can invite people to join us if depending on the nature of what the constructive change is. That it's somebody was talking about mutually beneficial or beneficial for others too. You know that mm-hmm. how we go about doing change really matters.
Beautiful words, wonderful words,
yeah.
As usual. Yeah, aww. Thank you so much for joining us and giving your perspective. And we're going to have to say bye for now.
And goodbye for now.
Yeah, and we also say bye to our listeners all over the world. And yes. Come back again next Thursday, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and listen to Free Voices. And
yes, for sure.
And we're going to end the show with some Atomic Vulture. We're going to dedicate this to Lady Faima on her road to recovery and health and positive energy. So here it is. Lovely. Atomic Vulture, Earthquake.